a bit more information about our journals, and also about what I think is important in journal publishing. I'm going to cover peer review and how we get those publications out to the audiences. Some of what I'm going to talk about relates to open access. Some of it actually is relevant to publishing, no matter where the work is being published. So there's the facts about Biomed Central, and we are a publisher of peer-reviewed open access journals. Those journals are online only, which enables them to be open access. But to give you a bit more of a feel about us as a company, we started 10 years ago. We had big ambitions from the start and a very big and a very strong message. And I think as came through yesterday, we've worked very hard over the years to make people understand our message, to help people understand our message and the way that we're doing things differently. Because we were ambitious, we started 60 journals from the get-go. We started journals across biomedicine, and those journals all take the BMC prefix, and we made sure that they spanned all of biomedicine, so that from the start, if research was coming to us and if people did want to publish in open access, there was a home for that research from the start. Some of those journals didn't receive many submissions for many months. Some of them are still quite small to this day, but it was important for us to do that so that where the research was out there and where people wanted to publish open access, we were offering that from day one. Something else that's really important to us as a company is providing a good service to our authors. It's key. We really need to do that. We need our authors to want to publish with us and to return to us as well. It's at the end of the day, it's part of our business model, but it's also part of our ethos to provide a good service to authors that want to publish with us. Something else that's been come across about Biomed Central is the way that we've grown over the years. That's been interesting to as a company to keep up with that growth. And as we saw from Matt's slides yesterday, we're seeing growth in Africa. There's potential for a lot more growth there as well. So I'm going to give you a bit more detail on just a couple of our journals to try and demonstrate the range of journals. And as I've said, one of our aims is to offer a home to research, no matter where it is and no matter what level the research is at, as long as it is sound science. So the first journal I'm going to talk about is BMC Medicine. It's one of our flagship journals, and in that regard, it is looking for the best work across all of medicine. It's looking for articles of astounding quality and broad interest and special importance. Obviously, not all research is going to fit into that category, so this is BMC Infectious Disease. This is one of the journals I mentioned a little bit earlier that we started with in the BMC series. It's under the editorial control of Biomed Central ultimately, but as it's developed as a journal, it's increasingly involved scientists and academics in the peer review and how it is run. The BMC series of journals ethos is to be inclusive. So again, the work that's published needs to be scientifically sound and does need to add something to the body of research, but it's a community journal. It does aim to be inclusive in what it publishes. So its rejection rate is a lot lower than BMC Medicine, for instance. But again, the scope of the journal is quite broad. So we do have more specialised journals, and malaria journals have been talked about, but malaria journals holds a special place in my heart, I think, because it was just the right journal at the right time. There hadn't been a journal that focused just on malaria before this, and I think it being open access at the time it was started was just exactly the right thing to do. So this journal is under the editorial control of Marcel Hommel, who I've worked very closely with. Bob Snow, who spoke yesterday, is on the editorial board. Marcel Hommel sets the interest level for this journal, but I think, as was said yesterday, he aims to be inclusive in what he's publishing as well. I should say that the editorial boards behind these journals are really key and are what makes them work and happen. The journals rely on the editorial boards to advocate the journals and also to help them run, to help out with peer review, make sure that things are running smoothly. We publish a different kind of journals. I'm calling them innovative journals, and they span subject areas, but they each have a specific aim. So this first one, the Journal of Medical Case Reports, publishes just case reports. And so that could be one particular thing that's happened in a surgical intervention. But we feel that it's still useful to record it in itself so that it's out there, so that the experience of what happened can be drawn upon. Something that this journal does is encourage the authors to give, the patients to give their perspective of the treatment and what happened as well. So there is a section in each article to enable that, to bring their experience to the articles as well. This relates to what Babawa was speaking about this morning. So Trials publishes randomized control trials. So there is a place, an open access place for those things to be published if authors wish to choose to publish there. It publishes randomized control trials, but also encourages conversation and debate around trials, why, what's important for them, why we're doing them, that kind of thing. So there's two different types of articles. And it also publishes study protocols. So the description of the trial before or as it's being started, which addresses some of the aims and issues that Babar was talking about this morning of, you register your trial. If you make everybody aware of what you're going to do in detail on that trial, then we can follow up later to see whether that actually happened and whether it was published, and about publication bias. Another journal is BMC Research Notes, and this really is it's offering a home to some of the work that may not fit into other journals. Some examples of that are software tools, databases, data sets. It encourages the publication of negative results, again, as was alluded to this morning. If work's been done just because it had a negative result, publication of it could be beneficial because it might prevent somebody else from repeating that work and getting the same negative result. So research, BMC Research Notes is a very widely spanning journal. Again, it covers all areas of biomedicine, but tries to provide a home to these special areas. It's what we call the peer review cascade. And so I've talked about some journals that have very high rejection rates. And what we want to do there is, as part of a service to authors, but also as part of trying not to overuse peer reviewers, which we know is a limited resource, if an article is rejected from a journal such as Genome Biology that has a high rejection rate, we'll try and encourage, provide a service to the authors so that as long as it is scientifically sound and does meet the criteria for another journal, if they're interested to have it published there, then we can transfer it. Now, sometimes articles are rejected before peer review, in which case peer review would still need to happen in the subsequent journal. Sometimes articles are published after peer review, in which case we ask peer reviewers in advance that the advice that they're given could be used by the subsequent journal. And so a decision can be made in that journal based on their advice so that we don't have to go necessarily to new people or back to those people to start the whole process of peer review again. So that just gives an example of how a peer review cascade could work, from the flagship Genome Biology to the inclusive BMC series journals, and then really Research Notes if it's scientifically sound. Peer review, as we know, is validation of science as far as possible before publication. I think we all know that peer review isn't perfect as a process. It does sometimes get things wrong. But I think that peer review can work differently in different disciplines. I'll come on to that a little bit later. As part of knowing that our service to our authors is very important, we actually survey our authors at two points in the publication process. So after they've submitted their article, we ask them how they found that process. They use our online submission system to do that. We ask them how that went and whether they have any comments. But then after they've published, if they are published, we ask them how they found the whole process of peer review and publication. And I've just put some examples of some quotes up there. And few years ago now, a researcher came to talk to our company about what was important for him in peer review as a researcher. And I really liked that he said that peer review should be fair, efficient, and friendly. He didn't necessarily say fast, which was quite important to me, because to get peer review right, it's not always fast, but as long as things are moving when they should. I like the way he described it as efficient. And I was lucky enough to be able to find some quotes from some of our authors that back up that, at least hopefully in some cases, we are providing that service across the board. So as I've said, peer review can, there are different options for peer review, and how it works to best effect can be different in different disciplines. A lot of journals operate a system where manuscript is submitted, manuscript is sent to peer reviewers, they give their advice on that manuscript, but they don't disclose who they are to the authors. And an editor who's running the whole process will make a decision as to whether the manuscript should be published or not. So obviously, depending on the process, you can go through more iterations of that. But some journals choose to be a little bit more transparent than that, and this is something that we call open peer review. Some journals choose that the reviewers do disclose their names to the authors, so the authors know who is providing comments on their article. And to go even further than that, if the article is published, then we display alongside the article the different versions of the submitted manuscript, plus the reviewers' comments and their names. So all the information around the peer review process, around the process that the article went through to get to this stage, is available alongside the article for people to see. And I've just circled the link there on your average article where you can go and get that information. Also to do with transparency in the process, we encourage our authors to declare their competing interests. Just to explain what a competing interest is, it's for us, the way that we ask our authors to declare it, it's anything in relation to the paper, that any relationships they have, personal or financial, with individuals or with companies that could be relevant to the paper. So to give an example of that, I could stand here and say that Biomed Central publishes the best journals in the world. If I'm to say that, then I should declare my competing interest is that I work for Biomed Central. They pay my salary. So it's putting the information out there and being as transparent as possible. And it may be that the information you're giving has no standing on the work, but just making the information transparent so that the author can make up their own mind, I think, is very important. So we do encourage our authors and indeed our reviewers to declare their competing interests. And we also encourage our authors to declare their specific contributions to a paper. So we ask each author to say what they, which work they contributed to the paper. And there's an example there up on the screen of how that's been done on one of our papers. We do ask them to say that all authors have read and approved the final version of the paper. And this is just about making sure that everybody is on the same page with the article and everybody knows what's what before the article is submitted and definitely before the article is published. So we like to encourage experimentation with peer review. As I've said, it's not necessarily a perfect process as it is. And this is an example of a journal that's done that. So it's putting a lot of emphasis on the transparency that I've talked about. It does operate open peer review. The reviewers' reports are available to the public alongside the published article. But what it also does is put less emphasis on going through a long process before publication. So it asks the author to select suitable reviewers from an editorial board, and it has very expansive editorial boards in different areas. It asks the author to select peer reviewers from the editorial board, and as long as three peer reviewers agree to assess the manuscript, then the manuscript will be published, and it will be published alongside the comments that the reviewers give. Now, the authors may choose to revise their manuscript as part of the process before the manuscript is published, but they don't necessarily need to. But they do need to be confident that their manuscript will be published alongside these visible comments, again, so that the reader can make up their own mind as to the work that's being presented. There's some caveats around this to keep it a little bit safe, in that we try not to encourage an author and a peer reviewer pairing more than 2 to 3 times a year on the journal. this journal's been going for quite a few years and has been very successful so far. Even for us, I think initially it was it felt very experimental and perhaps even a little bit dangerous, but it's working very well so far. So this is just to say that we do operate within a wider framework of support. Some of these organisations have been mentioned already as part of this conference, but COPE is a Committee on Publication Ethics, and they're there for support for journal editors and publishers in issues that may come up. They help us if we have issues of ethics on papers and in shaping our guidelines and how we work. COPE are very useful and we work very closely with them. The ICMJE, again, Babawa mentioned in her presentation, so we are affiliated to them, which means that people publishing in our journals do need to register their clinical trials before they publish. And OASPA is the Open Access Scholarly Publishers Association. So we're making sure that we're working very closely with other publishers who are offering open access so that we're all pulling in the same direction and we're all trying to achieve the same goals with respect to open access. So maximum exposure. So this is how you can get maximum exposure for your work. And obviously open access is a very good start. If there aren't barriers to accessing your work, it is a very good start, but it's not the whole picture. It's important for your work to be indexed in the right places, so you need to make sure that it will be included in whichever places people in your discipline are looking for the work. So I've given some examples there of PubMed, PubMed Central, Scopus, but there are many more subject-specific examples of indexing companies. And it's important for it to be promoted. As we know, it's a lot easier to promote nowadays. There's many more vehicles for promotion than there used to be. That also means there's a lot more noise out there. You're competing with a lot more. But I think it is important to take full use of the opportunities for promotion, such as writing blogs on your articles, such as tweeting. We do press release articles, and we have systems such as article alerts so that people can sign up and receive articles that are of interest to them as soon as they are published. We're going through a process at the moment of redesigning our websites, and we're making sure that the new websites very much support this functionality so that if a journal editor wants to have their own blog on their own journal website, that they can do that. If they want a Twitter feed, then they can do that. We've seen the visibility slide before, but I think it's just as important to show that the information is being read. And these are very recently or quite recently published articles, and these are the most accessed articles over the last 30 days or so. And they're receiving over 9,000 accesses on the Biomed Central platform. They will also be receiving accesses elsewhere, because this doesn't count people that are accessing them through PubMed Central and places like that. So I think the actual numbers are much higher than we can show here. And again, we've seen about impact factors. We know they're not perfect, and they're certainly not perfect as a measure of a researcher. And even as a measure of how well a journal is doing, they're not perfect. But they do show us that open access research is not only being read, but it's being used, because it's being cited and our journals are getting good impact factors. So these are journals that are very new in the context of things. They've all been most of those have been started in the last 10 years, which really is new for journal publishing, and they already have good impact factors. Just to highlight a few more benefits for authors. So we do try and make the whole process as seamless as possible, online submission, electronic peer review and production. The articles are published as soon as they are ready, which I think is really important. So we don't work in issues in the way that a printed journal would work. We don't have to wait for an issue to be complete before we can put the work out there. So articles can go online in as soon as they are ready to be published. And we don't have space constraints because we're online only. That can be very useful, particularly useful in different disciplines, but for figures, for extensive data sets, it can enable video footage if that's useful to back up the research, very useful in imaging areas and that kind of thing. And we do have the article processing charge, which Carrie talked about yesterday, but it's important to say that we don't have further charges for colour because we're not printing in colour, which is something that other journals do have. The tips for getting published. This is an area that I'm not overly confident in talking to you about, because I can only give you the publisher's perspective and what we see as being important in pulling your article together. I'm not well placed to tell you exactly how to write up your article. But I think it is important to say, and the first points are covering the fact that really doing your work justice through your article is really important. So making sure that the points that you have to make are very clearly made through your article is really important. People will scan articles when they're deciding whether to peer review them or deciding whether to use and cite them. So really making sure that your work comes across clearly is, I think, very important. And paying attention to journal policies can sometimes just make sure that the peer review process goes a little bit smoothly. Different journals will ask you for different things, such as making sure that your clinical trial is registered or making sure that your figures are in a certain format. Those kind of things, just having a quick read of some of that information before submission can help the process to go a bit more smoothly. So I'd say that your title and your abstract really are your advert for your piece of work. And it comes back to what I was saying earlier. You submit your research to a journal. The journal editors will then endeavour to find peer reviewers to assess it. And if you're coming across very well in your title and your abstract, which is what the peer reviewers will see when they make their decision on whether to peer review or not, then you're more likely to get peer reviewed quickly and get the decisions that you need and to get peer reviewed by the right people. And similarly, if the work gets published, making sure that your message is clear will help to attract readers and will help to attract citations as well. So when you submit an article, you're asked, often asked to include a cover letter as well. And these are just suggestions for what it could be useful to include in your cover letter. Again, to make sure that the journal editor and the peer reviewers really get what it is that you're trying to, the message that you're trying to put across. So making sure that they understand the scientific question that you're addressing, the key finding that you've come up with, perhaps even citing some recently published papers that are relevant to the work that you're doing. And making sure that the significance of your work is understood is, I think, really important. I think that brings me to the end. So just to say thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Ruth. I must declare my competing interest in that I work with Ruth, but I hope you'll all agree that it was a very interesting talk. Does anyone have any questions on Ruth and publishing? Yes, sorry, Michelle. Thanks.
Was hyperlinking what was previously static text to other kinds of objects, whether those are data sets, in some cases they're YouTube.
Alongside the article. I think moving forwards, we're interested in integrating that kind of information more easily into the body of the article rather than having it as somewhere that's separate and was still part of the article, but you know, putting it in the right place in the article rather than a link at the side. And your second question is about whether that poses challenges to the peer review.
To access that information, then there could possibly be challenges there. But we'd very much make sure that if there's information attached to an article, then it does go to a peer reviewer. One article type that we support is called software. And we do make sure that peer reviewers have access to the right things so that they can access the software if they're reviewing.
I suppose what I'm thinking of is something like a data set which is live. If it's linked and integrated to static content, it might actually change between the time that a reviewer looks at it and to when the content's actually consumed.
Time may either not be there or behave in a different way, or just to refer to a data set as this particular data set, if it is dynamically changing, you need to be able to repeat the analysis with the original data. So that's why we do encourage authors not just to link to things but to upload copies of them, either to Biomed Central's journals where we can preserve them and they get preserved in all the international archives that take copies of our content, or even better in some cases, to an appropriate digital repository of data. So depending on the different types of data, there are certain repositories available. The NCBI in America runs quite a few, but also there are initiatives to create more general data repositories, and we're working with some of those. There's a project called Dryad, and there's another which makes use also of DataCite, which is a standard for citing data sets using DOIs, And what that enables is that even if that data set subsequently moves from that website to a different website, the DOI can keep track of it. You can make sure you're always referring back to that same authentic data set, which won't change over time.
Bit of interests. Is Biomed Central in any way connected to other publishing companies or conglomerates?
So we're owned by another publisher called Springer, so we have close connections there. But collaboratively, we work very closely with other publishers who are trying to achieve the same aims as us. We do that as part of the OWASPA organization that I'm part of there.
Of course, I'm asking if there wouldn't be a conflict of interest between Springer and Biomed Central in publishing certain papers or not publishing certain papers.
There's some healthy competition, I'd say, but ultimately no. And in fact, Springer are now moving into open access. So they have a program called Springer Open, and they will be publishing open access journals in areas around biomedicine. That we don't cover, and I think that just kind of, I think that was raised earlier as to, you know, so biomedicine has been a bit of a starting point for open access. What about these other areas such as social sciences and humanities? So Springer will be enabling that, and they're using our expertise, if you like, and the work that we've been doing and our publishing platforms to help them do that.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have a more remark. My father, luckily still alive, always says being poor is not so bad, having been rich. And I am stating, I'm quoting him because I'm working in a university hospital, and I'm able to access all information. So that's what I mean by being poor later. Now, in a way, open access encourages people, not I see also from high income countries, to publish with you, and they should be encouraged more and more, but also people from low-income countries to publish their findings with you. And in such a way, they're bringing their findings to the rich countries without getting anything back from the rich countries, as long as the low-income countries do not have the access to huge database like PubMed and all the other, and the complete text behind them. Real open access would be two ways. And in a way, this reminds me of the old colonialism, where raw material was brought to the rich countries and processed. Because if someone in Tanzania or Kenya is doing interesting research, publishes in open access, that someone, and you say, yeah, you should quote all the relevant articles. I often wonder whether they have access to all the relevant articles. But anyway, this person publishes, and then his findings are being used because they are in open access by someone in a rich country. So I'm afraid that open access will only, I hope it will not happen, but it could happen that it will broaden the gap between those two in the divide.
If I may, I'll take a slightly different take on that. My own take is that it's only going to, enhancing visibility is only going to enhance the stature of the research. I say people knowing about it and encouraging collaboration between people elsewhere in the world that may not have known about that work, I think can only bring us benefits. So that's my just my personal view on that is that we'll see what Matt's got to say. You know, as they wish with it through their own information, and I think that's very important in all of this, that the work isn't taken away from them in any way. It remains their own work. If they want to print out copies and make sure that's distributed elsewhere or whatever, then they can do that.
And just a couple of points to add. Open in the international research community is really valuable, and so I think there are really strong interests for African researchers in publishing open access journals.
Sorry, I think it's a great exit. Are very important in looking at this political imbalance in knowledge access and the knowledge gap that exists. So I think it's in part also a matter, it's not the primary issue, but for African researchers to assert the value of their research against preconceived ideas that actually determine, as we said yesterday, what's international and what's global. We need to be better publicists for what we do. And if I may just go back to the previous talk too, this is surely an area in which UNESCO can play a role, because that's what you're there for, to actually look at these political hierarchies and help have dialogues around them.
Thank you. We've got a question or question. Very important that there's one final publication, and it's the same in both. And if there are ways to...
I just one little, if you could supply some input on these brave initiatives to expand coverage of biomed-centred journals into physics and mathematics and chemistry, how good are they doing? Thank you. I mean, this math and chem initiative.
If we can just pass the microphone over to Matt.
So, for Biomed Central, prior to becoming part of Springer, it was relatively challenging for us to expand into these other areas. One of the reasons, I think, is that those areas haven't been growing as rapidly as biomedical research. So for us, we could start new journals all the time, and there was just a real kind of gap. People needed new ways to be able to communicate all this sort of flood of research in biology and medicine. Whereas in some other areas, some of the existing journals had a very kind of... everything was quite tied up, quite difficult to break into. But there is increasing awareness in those communities of the benefits of open access. I mean, existing journals are interested in switching to open access. And Springer has really excellent visibility and contacts in those areas. So there are journals already now on the Springer open platform. There's a nanotechnology journal, for example. And that's just flipped straight across to this open access model and is getting many dozens of submissions every month. So it's still very early days. The first Springer Open journal only opened for submissions a few months ago, and they'll publish their first articles in January. But Springer is very ambitious about it, so it's looking like it will, you know, hopefully those non-biomedical areas could grow to be as big as Biomed Central pretty quickly.